Here are the current numbers. It is cold. Wind southwest at 6, 5 degrees in both Racine and Kenosha. Wind chill minus 15. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8. The Morning Show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Well, the month of February, of course, includes not only notable holidays like Groundhog Day and President's Day, but also, of course, Valentine's Day. And it's not actually all that often that we've taken time on the morning show to think about Valentine's Day and the whole matter of relationships and romance and so on. But we have such an opportunity today that excites me very, very much. We're going to be talking about a really interesting, fun, entertaining, illuminating book called Romances and Practicalities, A Love Story, Maybe Yours, in 250 Questions. The heart and soul of this book is a list of 250 questions in all, compiled by my morning show guest, Lindsay Jill Roth, as she was making her way through the early days of a relationship with someone who, for most of the book, she refers to as the Brit, a British financier whom she met and with whom she began a relationship. But because they were going to be, at least for a time, living quite apart, with thousands of miles and five time zones between them, they decided that they needed to engage in something that Lindsay Jill Roth calls conscious coupling. And part of the way in which they could get to know each other better, even far apart, was to create this list of thoughtful questions to really understand each other and how they make their way through the world and how they would likely work together as a couple. And as a matter of fact, they ultimately did become a couple, a married couple, and they are parents of two children and continuing to live very, very happily. But in the meantime, this project from early in their relationship is then the subject of this wonderful new book published by William Morrow. You have probably consumed various things that Lindsay Jill Roth has created during her award-winning career as a television and live events producer, with her work being shared through NBC, ESPN, the Masters, the Grammys, the U.S. Open, and for a time she was the producer of the Emmy-nominated Larry King Now, and also the author of a novel called What Pretty Girls Are Made Of. But we are talking today about her newest book, Romances and Practicalities, A Love Story, Maybe Yours, in 250 Questions. Lindsay Jill Roth, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you so much for having me. Can I actually tell you what thrills me most about being on here with you right now?
Okay.
It's not on there because my bio would be too long, but I started my career in morning radio.
Ah, well, very good. That is fun to know. So,
yes, I'm happy to be here with you today.
That's great. So I have really enjoyed exploring this book, and I have to say, and you'll appreciate this with your background, that I actually have seen a lot of books roughly like this over the years. I mean, but it is always such a joy when a book like this turns out to be actually rather unlike its many predecessors. I mean, that your take on this is really unlike any that I have ever seen before. I wonder, as you thought about the possibility of taking this, in a sense, private project between you and your friend, who ultimately became your husband, if you thought a lot about all of the other books that are already out there in the world and what you might have to say that would be both fresh and truly useful.
You know, when you're going through a time, as I was when I was dating, and the books out there at the time were things like The Rules or He's Just Not That Into You, and you're trying to learn things and you're trying to lean into a system, you don't know until you have the hindsight that what you were leaning toward wasn't the healthiest way for me, for example, to approach relationships. So as I was going through it and creating this system, and it not only did it work for me, but suddenly I started sharing it with friends, friends of friends, parents would reach out to me. It became an activity for couples, and it really did and does work. I have been asked the question that you just asked me, and it's, you know, I go straight to, it's 2025 right now, and we are at a time where it's healthy to be yourself. It's great to have confidence. No more of this waiting for someone to make the first move or hiding yourself behind what you think you should say when you're with someone. No more of that. And I really want to do away with those past game-playing methods of how relationships should work. So for me, this thesis of my relationship that ultimately became my marriage is the thesis of the book, which is the sexiest type of long-term healthy romance is one that's based in practicality. And not only if you learned how to communicate in your personal life will it help you in your romantic relationships, it will help you in life and in business as well.
Let's talk for a moment about the early days of your relationship with this gentleman, again, whom you referred to nearly throughout the book, yes, as the Brit. Because I think that will help our listeners understand why this project, as you refer to it in the book, was such a good idea. So first of all, explain to our listeners how the two of you first encountered each other, and then what it was like when you finally met for the very first time.
Of course. So I was that girl that was walking down everybody else's aisles in their weddings, and I hadn't been able to find my person. So when friends just said, hey, we want to set you up, this was not a thoughtful setup. This was sort of a he's single, she's single setup. Let's see if this will work. We talked, it took a while for us to meet, but there was something there when the Brit and I met. He was working on an open-ended project in New York where I lived, and this is how the book begins, so I'm not giving any spoiler alerts here, just kind of getting you into the beginning of the book, but 30 minutes before our first date, his open-ended project that had him in New York became closed. And it took us a while to meet, so we'd been chatting before because I was filming a TV show, so I was traveling, he was traveling. But when his project was closed, we had to decide, do we like each other enough to sort of double down? And look, we're from different countries. We are different religions. We grew up differently. All these things are setting ourselves up for not a long-term relationship. But the fundamentals of who we were and how we wanted to live our lives, we kind of knew were already there, though we had so much more to discuss. So when it came down to it, and again, I tell this story in the book, we're on a FaceTime one night, he's back in London, and he said something. I didn't know we were on the cusp of a pivotal moment. So I said something, and his reaction to me was, I just don't know you well enough yet. And that was like a stab in the heart for me. Truly. And I thought, oh boy, I like this guy. And I had a choice in that moment. I could say, you know what, I'm just going to retreat. This is going to be too hard, and do everything that I'd always done and just keep the pattern going. Or I could lean into it and say, I'm going to listen to him. And if he says we don't know each other well enough yet, what can I do to help us get to know each other better? And that moment, that random conversational moment on FaceTime of two people who were not yet in love in two different countries was the seed of this entire book.
ahead of us digging into the questions, I want to give you a chance to talk about a couple of things that you and the Brit did during that time when you were 3,000 miles apart, five time zones apart, and in what I think at one point you call romantic lockdown, where he was there, you were here, and yet you continued to want to be together in some way. And so you came up with a couple of wonderful ways to do that that I think are so intriguing and speak a lot to your imagination and creativity. One involved running, one involved reading. I wonder if you would just mind sharing about that with our listeners.
Yes, of course. I like to say that we only could use two of our five senses when we were at this stage in romantic lockdown, right? We could only see and hear each other. So we had to compensate. And the way we compensated was we would read the same book at the same time and have our own little book club about it. We would have movie nights or I would have movie afternoon and he would have movie evening because of the time difference. And we'd say, this was not where you could link anything up electronically at the time. And we'd press play at the same time and pause at the same time. So I would go running in Central Park and he would be in either Hyde Park or Green Park or one of the beautiful London parks. And we would have each other in our ears and we wouldn't necessarily need to have a conversation, but we would be with each other. So we had said we were together separately.
Hmm. Love that. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Lindsay Jill Roth, and we are talking about her wonderful book, Romances and Practicalities, A Love Story, Maybe Yours, in 250 Questions. So let's talk a little bit about the actual assembling of these questions. And I'm sure at the outset you weren't thinking, we need to come up with 250 questions to pose to one another, although that's what it ultimately became. At the outset, what did you imagine this was going to look like? And then, in a sense, how did it become what it ultimately became?
Of course. So initially, it was how do we get to know anything and everything we can about each other before we take that plunge, before one of us lives in a different country, before we start figuring out if we want to have kids, what religion they will be, because things that were different for us. So for us, you know, I started simple, and I really, and this is how the book was formed. I looked at all different areas of our lives, right? So finances and children and where we could live, what kind of place we could live, how things like routines and rituals, and how do you argue, and about each other's family. You know, I was learning that we are default parenting is put upon us, you know, because of the household we grow up in, and that really affects how we communicate. Now, the first step in this was having him say, yes, I would love to go through this with you and answer questions with you. So I was very lucky in that for people who are listening who want to try this system, there are many on-ramps to the system. It's not, there are 250 questions because it's not prescriptive. It aims to cover a whole smattering of things depending on the reader's lives. But step one is finding someone who has the courage to smile and say, okay, this might be a little scary or this could be really fun and let's do it. So that's step one. And he was willing to do that for me. So then when I began to assemble the book, and look, I'm a storyteller, right? Whether it's on TV, starting in radio, my former book, I really wanted to tell a great story. So the book is my transatlantic love story woven throughout this book. And then I interviewed 100 or so people, including subject matter experts. So look, I think I'm pretty interesting, but not everyone is going to think I'm the most interesting. So by telling other people's stories along with me makes the reader feel really safe when they're going through this with their either potential partners or partners. And then as I did more research, I talked to Barbara Corcoran and Susie Orman for the money chapter, Dr. Nicole LaPera, the holistic psychologist, Mark Hyman, Drew Prohit, I mean, really great experts. They helped me with the science behind what I was creating. And through that, I figured out other areas and more specifics for everyone else to ask that we ultimately asked as well.
Right. I think one of the ways in which your book is different from a lot of others that have been written that maybe at a careless glance would seem to be similar is that I think a lot of books like this get written, and it's basically written, even if unconsciously, where the author wants to tell you what to do. I mean, the author wants to tell you the best way to think about your finances as a couple, or the author wants to tell you the best way to raise your children, or whatever it might be. And really, your book is not predicated on any of that intention at all. You're not trying to tell anybody how to live their lives. You're not trying to influence any of the choices that anybody is going to make. You just want to set up a framework in which people ask of each other these really important questions, and together they find out what their respective answers are, and if their answers align in a way that makes sense or is workable. But it just seems to me that there is an open-endedness to this that is really important and is part of what makes the book really special.
Oh, thank you. I want people to figure out their own love story. And if I come at them with things that are right, that assumes that their way will be wrong. Or if you approach these questions in a way of I'm right, then your partner is wrong. I want people to ask themselves these questions. I want people to understand their perspective. The word deal breaker is a term that I hate because I find that people go into relationships with deal breakers that they haven't properly thought about, or they haven't thought about specifically enough. So if I can get people starting a dialogue with themselves, they can then be a better partner and a better potential partner to someone else. And again, that's why there are so many on-ramps to this system. If you're not ready to talk about your families, but you feel comfortable talking about having kids one day, go for that first. If that's a better way to get to know you, I think you should take what I have brought and adapt it for yourself.
Right.
It's not hard to do that, and it's also quite sexy.
Well, and that's, at one point you say, this is a tool that's meant to be flexible. So you're not trying to tell exactly how it should be used, let alone telling people, you know, what the answers to these questions should be. It's kind of intriguing. I think you hope people will take this book and open it up and start reading it, I mean, start to finish. I mean, there is an arc to it, and yet you don't necessarily, as you were just saying, want people then to explore these questions in a careful sort of linear fashion. But you've clearly thought about this a lot and want this book in part to be a story, partly your story.
It's a great story. I mean, I lived it, but I know it's a great story. So I love when people read the book from start to finish and think about how they would then use the questionnaire in their lives. So in a perfect world, you can say, great, I'm going to read this book, get a great set of stories in here. And then you know what? Maybe I'm going to start with my partner on the routines and rituals chapter. Even though that's the last chapter on the book, those are the questions that resonate the most for me, or feel like those are the most pressing. You know, for me, we did the religion section last. But for someone else, look, if you meet at church and you want to start there, good on you. I support you for that. It's an easy in. We met at church. Let's talk about it.
Mm. One of the things you also say is that although it's probably ideal for someone to use these questions the way you and the Brit did, but that it's even possible for these questions to be of great benefit even if you happen to have a partner that for whatever reason is not ready to do it or not interested in doing it or whatever, and even for someone who is single, who really has at that moment in time nobody in their life with whom they're cultivating a romance or relationship, that even for them these questions could be valuable. Talk for a moment about the usefulness of these questions even beyond the way you and the Brit utilize them.
Of course. A common response to this book so far has been, how can I not have talked about that? How can we not have talked about that? Or if you're single, it's, oh, I didn't even think I should bring that up. right? Which tells me that you're not getting deep enough. So this book can help people in different stages of their relationships, which I think what you're asking. So again, if you're single, it's great to have things to pull out when you're on a date. Look, we get into defaults, right? We talk about our careers, we talk about where we live, we talk about our days, but pepper in some great questions in there to help get to getting to know your partner. Ask them about animals and pets, right? You learn about if someone's a caretaker, if with how they treat animals. You learn, oh gosh, this person lets their dog sleep in the bed. That's for me, or that's not for me, right? Oh, I was bitten by a dog when I was 5. Ugh, can we talk about that, right? So that gets you into fun stories, and you can even learn about someone's childhood, right? If you're on the cusp of a big moment, whether it's moving in with somebody or getting engaged to someone, let me be clear, by the way, this book is not about getting married. This is not to get married, do this. This is for long-term, healthy partnership, whatever partnership long-term means to you. So I want to be clear, there's no judgment whether you're getting married or not. You can ask these questions at any cusp moment. Look, studies have shown that if you're going to move in with someone, right, to set yourself up for success, it's the intentionality behind it. So it's not when you move in. It's how you move in together, right? So if it's after 3 months, but you talk through all the logistics and what you think maybe the impact may be, that's setting yourself up for success versus just saying, my rent is going up and I spend all my time at your house anyway. Can I just move in with you? And then doing it without talking about how it's going to work. That's not setting yourself up for success. And then if you've been with someone for a long time, there are still things that you should talk about. I always say it's easier to revisit something that you've spoken about in the past when it comes up in the future. So listen, use me. Say I read this book. I know this sounds a little funny. Can we ask each other some questions?
I think as I read your book, I realized that the world of dating is so much different. I mean, I think for anybody who's as old as I am, I'm 65 years old, and I grew up in rural America. And so I think for me, it's a little bit of a foreign concept to try to imagine being relatively young and single in a huge city like New York City, and the means by which people nowadays tend to meet one another. And
it's a minefield.
Right. And I think the thing that is sort of eye-opening to me is that in that kind of environment, in that kind of landscape, it really can be tricky to really know who somebody is. And particularly when you are starting to date somebody who is just a picture on a screen and a name and a description that might or might not be accurate, that whole matter of knowing who this person really is, what is most important to them, it's a different world than it used to be. And even though even once upon a time it was important to know one another, I think you basically say that you're writing a book that will be of value to people who are living in this new environment, which is very, very challenging.
I believe this book is important for those people, because when you are trying to get to know someone, again, you don't always know what to ask, right? These things, they're not often on the top of your head, right? So through fun conversation, you can feel intimate with a partner. You can get closer to a partner, whether it's asking questions like, what do you prefer, laundry or dishes? Or how did your parents argue when you grew up, you know, or what relationships were most impactful to you in your formative years. Things like that can actually be very fun conversation, but they're not on the tip of our tongues. And then for your listeners who have been in long-term relationships, I always say it's really nice to check in about certain things. A lot of couples don't do this, but whether it's your finances, your weekend plans, who in your family needs a little bit of extra help right now, how you want to spend your time, all of those things, if you start talking about them more often, sex, they become easier to speak about, and it becomes the language between you two. So I get asked, but I've been in a couple for a long time. Can this still work for me? Not only can it, but it will. It will help you feel more intimate. Look, people go to the bedroom after asking a few of these questions. It really connects people if your partner and you are willing to be open about it.
I'm going to go out on a limb right now, and I'm going to hope that you have nothing to do with The Bachelor or The Bachelorette, those two TV series on television. Is that right?
So it's so funny that you say that. I've never worked on a series like that ever, but I do like to watch them.
Okay. So let me just say we'll have to agree to disagree about that because I do not care for a series like that. And I'll tell you the reason why, and it's ultimately a way to give praise to your book, is that so much of the time when we see these potential couples, all they talk about is what they're going to do next. I mean, I thought after this dinner, I thought we'd go on a boat ride, and I thought after that, how about a walk through the woods and whatever. But we never see them talking about anything that matters, not a word.
Yeah.
And
it's funny. Yeah, it's funny that you say that because it's easy to fall in love with someone in a hot air balloon or on a private helicopter ride going to your own island for an afternoon, right? That is a shared experience that's magical and beautiful, but that doesn't set you up for long-term success. I mean, I like to watch these shows. I love love, and I love to see what forms it can take. But listen, I am dying to get my book into the hands of some of those producers because I would love to see these couples hammer out some of these questions live on screen. So if any of your listeners are in this space, let me help these reality contestants.
Well, I mean, just the fact that the track record is so atrocious. I mean, when you look statistically at how many of these couples where the guy gives the rose to whoever or whatever, I mean, statistically, it's working out terribly. I mean, very few of these couples ultimately end up permanently together. And it's not a surprise because the groundwork has not been on any kind of solid foundation of who really is this person and can our lives really align. I mean, that's a whole different question than are we going to enjoy a boat ride together? And so,
the question, can our lives align, is absolutely the wrong question that you should be asking because there's nothing specific about that question. You need to ask all the little questions to then decide if your lives can align, and then you can talk about if your lives will align. You reminded me, I was interviewed by Chris Harrison, who hosted The Bachelor for many years. I was on his podcast, and I asked him a question that you might be wondering about. I asked him if he saw a higher level communication between couples who ultimately made it or who ultimately made it for a long time. Like, was there a difference in between how they communicated versus the couples that were showmances, as one may say? And he said, absolutely. Because to what I was saying before, it's easy to manufacture romance. But unless you actually have the conversation about it, then it's not going to go anywhere. And he noticed a big difference in communication between those who lasted.
Hmm. We're speaking with Lindsay Jill Roth about her book, Romances and Practicalities, A Love Story, Maybe Yours, in 250 Questions. In the midst of a romance with a gentleman she refers to throughout most of the book as the Brit, a relationship which at least for certain times was a very much a long-distance relationship, Lindsay Jill Roth ended up compiling a list that ultimately reached 250 questions that could help her and her male friend, the Brit, come to a deeper understanding of one another. And it is those questions that, in a sense, form the heart and soul of this lovely book. You've already mentioned that in terms of if someone were to take these questions in hand or take your book in hand, although it's helpful to read the book start to finish, I mean, these questions can be accessed in any order that one would desire. You've made the choice to start your book with a chapter devoted to animals and pets, which I think is really interesting. And as the owner of a golden retriever, I certainly understand how a pet can be a precious, irreplaceable part of one's life. You actually tell a really interesting story in this chapter about something incredibly scary that occurred with your dog Latte, and the way in which your friend the Brit participated in that really scary story ultimately showed you a lot about him. I wonder if you would mind sharing this story with our listeners.
No, not at all. So it was early in our relationship, and the Brit was in town with me in New York from London, and we were dog sitting my family's dog called Latte. And the Brit was so kind. He brought this beautiful chocolate bar for me from London, and we'd left it on top of the table and had a great night, watched a movie, went to bed, and early in the morning I could hear like a like rustling just like that, and I woke up and I thought, what is that? And it turns out that was Latte eating the chocolate bar from, I don't know how she did it, she was tiny, from the middle of the table. And I thought, oh my god, dogs, chocolate, this is terrible. So I rushed her to the animal emergency, and I have a very jet lagged man in my apartment at that time, and he got up and he sort of said, what's going on? I said, don't worry, listen, he was not a dog person, he was happy to have her, but dogs were not his thing, which came out later, and we can talk about that. So rush this dog to emergency, and I'm sitting there and I'm a mess, because not only is she not my dog, she's my parents' dog, and they're away. And I just have this version of the phone call playing in my head, guys, I've killed your dog, you know? I mean, that's what's going through my head, and I'm freaking out. So he wakes up very shortly after and says, I'm coming to you. There's no way I'm letting you go through this alone. I'm coming to you. Anyway, so I saw in this man who was not really a fan of dogs at the time, the most caring, comforting, wonderful side. And I'll never forget, you know, she was in the back getting all charcoaled up. She lived, by the way, that everyone should know. And she was totally fine and lived a great long life. But he sat me down and said, look, I'm taking you out to breakfast. There's nothing we can do here. I have you. We will call. We will be present. But we're going to get you what you need right now. And I remember walking across. It was a freezing day. And I ran out of the house. I mean, I probably looked the worst I've ever looked. I was crying. I was snotty. And I still felt beautiful when I was with him. And I really, in that moment, I saw him as a caretaker. I saw that he cared for this animal that I cared about. And he took care of me. He didn't ask what I wanted to eat. He didn't put anything on me. He took charge and he took care. Anyway, we got her back and we nursed her back to health. And actually, for the rest of the weekend, Latte, of all things, spent the whole weekend sitting on his lap and not mine. And he loved it. So, but for us, that was a big trial for us. And that tested us. But that also, I was listening and I was paying attention. And that showed me a lot about him. But when I spoke with animal experts, they recommend talking about this for obvious reasons. But the one thing I really learned, I spoke with Dr. Evan Anton, who's a great, very well-known vet. And he said when two people are coupling and they both have pets, don't just throw them together and say, have at it. Don't just bring one to the other's house. Choose to introduce them like you would introduce kids, or very sensitively set them up for success so you set your coupling up for success. And you can learn more about how to do that in the book, but that was something that I learned that I was really impressed by.
Love that, and such a great story. The second chapter is devoted to the really important topic of communication, I mean, I like that you started with the animal pets thing, and but in some ways, of course, even more fundamental is this whole matter of communication, and the various questions that you pose or suggest that we pose to one another are so interesting. And I think my favorite of all of them is the very basic question: how do you fight? And how do I fight? Because that is, I mean, it comes down to that whole matter of disagreements. I mean, like, for instance, how interesting it would be on The Bachelor if they would take a couple minutes to ask a question like that to one another. I mean, when you get upset about something, what do you do? Do you stomp out of the room? Do you throw a lamp? Do you shut down? When I get upset, what do I do? And then, of course, you know, ultimately that's that question of, you know, can we have a life together if we have very different styles when it comes to how we fight? But that's a great question.
By the way, if you know how your partner fights, then you can both fight about what you're actually fighting about and not get annoyed with the other person for how they fight and for how they play the game, right? You can focus on the issue because you know that your partner needs an extra minute. So you're going to give them that time because you love and respect them, and you really only want to focus on the issue and not how angry you are that they're taking an extra minute, right? I mean, wouldn't you respect someone if they answer that question like, I got to be honest with you, but I'm really passive aggressive. Just give me like 20 minutes to say some mean stuff, be passive aggressive, and then I really will move on. I mean, it's not ideal, but if someone says that to you, you really know how to handle them.
Hmm. Yeah, understanding each other's communication style, and especially the way in which a given person processes difficult circumstances or disappointments or just things that make them mad, that's huge. And again, the range of the way in which a given person might deal with those moments in life can be vastly different. I mean, there's a huge array of possibilities, and I love how your book explores some of that. So just to give our listeners an understanding of how the book is shaped, within this chapter of communication, several of these specific questions are raised. But actually, at the back of the book, where we see the entire list of questions, there are 15 communication questions in all, and they're really, really interesting. What prompted the choices that you made in terms of the specific questions that appear through kind of the narrative thread of the book? Are these the most important questions, or just the questions that seem to kind of arise most organically out of whatever you were talking about?
So I lived this book. This book really came out of an organic process. So we, you know, my now husband and I have gone through thousands of questions, too crazy it sounds, to narrow it down to 250. But the goal was, which questions have the most impact? But that shouldn't be scary, because they're not all serious. Some are to provoke discussion. Some are to help you laugh together. Some are to help your intimacy. Some are to focus on your childhood. Some are meant to be extraordinarily practical. So I'm really trying to hit all bases here to give you all those experiences that you need with your partner to have a full view of each other. And now, they are not you questions. So, and meaning their I answer questions. So it's not like, what do you find is my most attractive feature? That's not going to help you have a long-term partnership, right? These are questions that you answer with I, and then you talk about as a we.
In the chapter devoted to families, in-laws, and so on, a really basic question is posed that I think is so interesting, which is, to your partner, do you want to emulate your parents' marriage? And you know, a kind of related question later is, do you want to parent yourself the way you were parented by your own parents? And it's so interesting. I mean, I think many of us go through life without ever stopping to think about how the way we are living, the way we are interacting with others, might either be a smooth flow out of what we learned from our parents, or a sharp sort of disconnect where we have decided that is not the way we want to live. But you're suggesting a really important question, it seems to me, that goes even beyond the matter of romance and relationships.
Well, and that is really four questions in one, if you think about it, because if the question is, do you want to emulate the relationship that your parents or parental figures had, right? That is something that you need to ask yourself first, right? Mm. Before you can then ask someone else.
Very true.
It's okay, by the way, if you don't know the answers right away, these are not meant to be spitfire questions. It's someone can show you they're just as present. If they say to you, you know, that's a really good question, I don't know the answer, or it's something I'm working on, but I would love to revisit it. Could I just take a few days and think about it? That's okay too. It still shows that it's topical for them and that they're willing to go there with you.
As you've already mentioned, you talk about, talk with or include in the sweep of the book, the input of a number of experts in various fields, and I think that adds mightily to the book. I think of those contributions, maybe my favorite is from the well-known designer Nate Berkus in the fifth chapter, which is about chores, domestic duties, and building a home. And I've enjoyed seeing him on television, but I knew very little about him, and I learned from your book that Nate Berkus is married to a designer, and the two of them have a really interesting relationship when it comes to that. Tell our listeners what I'm talking about.
So Nate was great. I mean, Nate the Great is kind of apt here in opening himself up, not only about how one should build a home, but he gave some great tips. Like, if your partner says to you an absolute no, no means no. Respect them, right? But if your partner leaves any room for discussion, then go on in for it, right? And stand up for what you believe. Now, he learned by being with someone who's in the same field as he is to be more flexible. And that was a big deal for him to really figure out, okay, we can both be great at what we do in the same field, but we have to be flexible with each other. Nate really also opened up. Nate's first love was lost in a tsunami. And he was so generous in opening up about, I guess, the generosity of his husband in allowing them to bring a former love into their lives, whether it was their son's middle name or photos together. And he was really open to me asking him about that and sharing the generosity of his partner there. And that was a really nice lesson for me to put in the book.
Right. I just love that. And it was kind of a reminder, too. Sometimes when we watch these design shows on television, you can kind of get the impression that there's one way to make this house beautiful, and it's this. I mean, we took this house that looked like this, and now voila, now it looks like this. It's so much better. But here Nate Berkus is married to someone, his husband, who is also a wonderful designer. And he talks in your book about how their taste is actually not particularly close.
The same.
Right. They have differences of opinion. Both wonderful designers, both, we presume, with great taste. But it kind of reminds us that there's a whole world of possibilities out there about what is beautiful or what we want our home space to look like, and the way in which they've gone through that together.
Yeah, and how do we honor both of us in our homes, which is your sacred place? And actually, that's a real personification to what this book is about. How do we honor each partner in this relationship so that together we can create greatness?
Absolutely. Well, the book touches on all kinds of other matters, including the matter of getting married, what a wedding should look like, what a marriage should look like, whether or not we have children, what happens when matters of health and medical care come up, and so on and so forth. I really am impressed by the scope of the book, and yet it's not overwhelming. It's in some
it's
respects
a long book.
Right.
It's pretty comprehensive.
Yeah. And it's a comfortable read. I mean that in the best sense of the word. I'm just curious now about you and your husband, well into your marriage. To what extent do these questions still play a role? Because, I mean, I think one could on the one hand assume that you sat down early on and kind of asked these questions of one another, and once you have the answers, well, there you go, and you can put these questions on the shelf, and that's that. And I suspect the answer is not that these questions continue to play some kind of role in your life together.
You are correct. Look, from the beginning, we set a life up of communication via these questions. Now, you can't always know how you're going to react in every single situation as it comes. But as I said, you know, we talked about things, money, sex, friendships, routines. So when they come up in our marriage, it's not awkward to bring them up because it's something that we've discussed before, right? So that's one. Number two is I advocate for check-ins, as we talked about before, but I will answer your question to say we do check in. You know, my husband, the Brit, is a finance guy, as you mentioned, and he would have the carte blanche to run our finances. It's not something I'm naturally good at. It's not something I particularly like. So in a very traditional relationship, he could run with that, and I could know nothing about where our money is, how it's held, how we're spending it, how we're investing it, all of it. But he won't let me do that. It's a part of that safety that we create together. We pour over our spreadsheet together. We make decisions together. We check in really regularly about our finances, and it doesn't make me feel less than. And by the way, we're not talking about how much money either of us make, because that's a question that's only the tip of the iceberg when you talk about finances, right? We talk about our kids, we talk about our sex lives. And this is not to say that all we do is talk ad nauseum, but these are small conversations that are small check-ins. And then when we get into bed at night and we do New York Times crossword puzzle together on his iPad and we're snuggled up together, we have a lovely ritual to end the day, and then we begin again the next day. So we practice what we preach, which I'm really proud to say. Hmm.
The book again is Romances and Practicalities, A Love Story, Maybe Yours, in 250 Questions, published by William Morrow and the author Lindsay Jill Roth. Lindsay Jill Roth, thank you so much for giving the world this really lovely, thought-provoking, practical, potentially tremendously helpful book. And I wish you and your husband only the very, very best as you go forward. And thanks again for being my morning show guest today.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much for enjoying the book so much.
We remind you that the morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock, and that the program is archived on our website, wgtd.org. And you can subscribe to the morning show as a podcast to enjoy a different morning show 7 days a week, including interesting interviews from our archives that are shared every Saturday and Sunday. Look for the morning show with Greg Berg. Let's talk about the weather forecast. It is a complicated one. Today, a relatively quiet day. It will be cloudy and cold, a high of 26 degrees. A winter weather advisory goes up very early tomorrow morning. We are looking tonight for another 2 to 3 inches of snow with a low of 23. Another 1 to 2 inches of light snow tomorrow with a high of 33 degrees. And still more snow, another 2 to 3 inches possible Saturday night with a low of 23 degrees. Sunday, cloudy, very cold, and perhaps yet another inch of snow, a high of 17. So 3, 5, 7, 8, 9, perhaps 10 inches of snow this weekend. This is WGTD HD.